Podcasting from the beautiful Mile High City, you're listening to the Do It Again podcast, the official podcast of Scientific Wrestling, the undisputed leader in no-holds-barred, catch-as-catch-can wrestling. Here's your host, Jake Shannon.
Thank you for tuning in to the Do It Again podcast, the official podcast of Scientific Wrestling, the undisputed leader in no-holds-barred, catch-as-catch-can wrestling. I am your host, Jake Shannon, and I am really excited today to have a guy that I respect a lot, and I want more people to know who he is, that he's available. The guy is just absolutely amazing. The man I'm talking about is Billy Scott. Now, Billy Scott was trained by Billy Robinson, and Billy used to tell me all the time that Billy Scott was the best American athlete that he ever trained, and Billy was very sparse with his compliments, so that is really saying something. So without any further ado, I want to bring in Billy Scott. Are you there, Billy?
Hey, Jake, how you doing? Nice talking with you.
Yeah, it's good talking to you. You know, I want to talk to the people and have the people kind of hear from you, your journey, your experience. I mean, man, you've been in the ring for like 30 years or so. Isn't that about right?
Yeah, that's right. That's correct, Jake.
And you just had a match like in the last couple of years too, haven't you?
Yes, actually it was in like it flew by quicker than what I thought. 2011 was the last time I was doing anything.
Wow. So. So that's that's spanning 20 years or more of in-ring competitive endeavors.
Oh yeah, I enjoyed it. You know, Coach Robinson was the person that I've always looked up to, and his being in at some part of time and spending time with him, my life with him is like the best time of my life.
Yeah,
as you know, over the years as you worked with him and stuff like that, and others worked with him that they knew what type of a technician, what type of a mindset he had at all time. You know, so.
Yeah, he was tough. I mean, if he really worked with you, you were good, because he wouldn't let you not be good. He'd go over it until you got it right. I mean, hours.
Oh, yeah. Same old thing. Do it again.
Yeah.
Do it again.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it was. He was just amazing. And like I said, it was the time that there's a lot of aggravation time, because, you know, you had so much respect for this man, and you really wanted to do to me, he's more like a father figure also. And I'm sure he's been to many others also.
So I really
wanted to do my best. So at all time, I'm sure everybody tried to do the best for him. And like I said, I enjoyed working with him, and there were so many times that when I was trying to do my best, because when he's, you know, with you working with him, you understand, and others, where if he told you step here, you step exactly there.
Yeah.
Had to be that exact position. You know, you want to be exactly, you know, set spot. It was just a drive that he had for anybody he worked with to perform and do their best. So.
Yeah, if you were a degree or an inch off, that would not cut it.
No way. There's so many stories, as you know, you heard too, I'm sure, and different things. But with Coach Robinson, of course, I'm owning a school in Smiths Grove, Kentucky. I've been there for 11 years. Well, it'll be 11 years this June. And I really enjoy working with the young kids and stuff like that. I have some pro fighters also. But just try to if I can just pass along half his knowledge, what he gave me, for me understanding, like, his take from his mind, you know, it was amazing. He would always tell you that, you know, I've taught you everything you know. I never taught you everything. I never taught you everything that I knew. Right?
Yeah.
That was one of his sayings. Especially if you got a little aggravated about things. He's like, you got to remember. And he'll set you straight. But like I said, I enjoyed him. He was more than, like I said, more than a coach.
Yeah, he really was one of a kind. I mean, it was such a blow, you know, with his passing. You know, it's funny because, so I'm having you on the podcast, but then just like 2 weeks ago, I had another one of what I call Billy's boys, which is you and mm-hmm. me and anybody else that's really mm-hmm. had Billy kind of get in their brain.
Right.
But I had Marty Jones on, who started.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Marty Jones was on, and he actually started with Billy
awesome.
When he was like 7 years old or something ridiculous. So Billy's coaching has been going on for so long, and there's so many people that he touched it that way, you know, and really changed their game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what I'm curious about is how you got your start. So, you know, did you start out in pro wrestling, or what was your genesis?
Actually, years ago, I started out in pro wrestling, and then of course, how I actually got with Coach Robinson was I had a younger brother. He did amateur wrestling. I did amateur wrestling. We always did some type of sports, and you know, as wrestling, it could be a team sport or individual sport. You know, you wrestle as a team, but at the same time, it's what you put into it, it's what you get out of it. And that's pretty much one of Coach Robinson's sayings also, you know, what you put into it, what you're going to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, how I got involved in this is I had went and fought with a company in Japan, and I fought for them for a few years. And then I had actually those issues came about, contracts and stuff. Anyway, make a long story short, they offered me a better contract and come back, and they would get me a coach. And I didn't know in depth of who the coach was, and they wound up presenting me with Coach Robinson.
Wow.
And that really turned my world around because there's things that you thought that you knew, and he kind of translated in his own way about these are the way it's going to go, and we're going to do it this way. And it didn't take you long to figure out that you had the master on your hands, and if you listen, you could. There's no telling how far he could take you. You know.
Yeah, that's the truth. That's the truth. So, so if I can just to get this straight from my own head, you were already doing. So you'd go, you know, obviously, like a lot of people who end up in pro wrestling, you start in the amateurs. You do that, it's fun, but there's nowhere to go. So you somehow get involved with the pros. That gets you mm-hmm. somehow booked in with a Japanese company. Was that already the UWFI, or was it a different
yes.
organization?
That was actually UWFI. And what it was is I went over and had a few matches. And when I had a few, I had lost and I won. Anyway, turned around, they was wanting to present the UWFI into the United States. And at the time, they did this. They sent me to Japan to do 7 weeks of training over there. And when I said training, you know, Coach Robin wasn't in my life at that moment. It was still just me and another guy named Shinji Sasaki. He did judo and jujitsu, and he did some, you know, collegiate style wrestling before, and he was teaching me some stuff where he had did some shoot wrestling and stuff in Japan itself. And they wanted me to be in this mixed fight with this IBF cruiserweight champion, which was James Waring. And at the time, he was also the current four-time. He held all four kickboxing world titles in kickboxing.
Wow!
And then he got into the boxing, and he had won some matches, and then eventually got into a title shot against someone. I don't remember the guy's name, but he knocked the guy out in the first round in Vegas to take Holyfield's belt. Whenever Holyfield gave up his belt, cruiserweight, to go to heavyweight, he left his belt vacant, and these two guys had a fight. But anyway, they won a mixed fight in Japan. And, they, of course, they went with different rules. You know, the rules is kind of silly, but same time, it, at the time, that time, it was the end thing to try to have the American people. Because, you know, at that time, a lot of time you've seen things on TV. You know, you've seen the pro wrestling. You've seen the kickboxing. You've seen the boxing. You know, and a lot of things you was basically a boxer against a boxer, kickboxer or karate against each other, judo was against each other. Each other in tournaments and stuff.
Well, this is so, when you're talking about that time, you're talking early 90s, right?
Yes, very. Yes, it was 1990, and then the fight that happened. It happened in 1991.
So this is well before UFC, before Pancrase, before anybody. Mm-hmm. I just got to explain this for the young cats that are tuning in, and you know, I mean. They don't even remember like old UFC. They only remember like post Ultimate Fighter, you know. For those that might be tuning into this podcast and have a little bit of interest in catch, the UWFI is what Josh Barnett's favorite promotion of all time. He always talks about it, and in fact, I think his upcoming Bloodsport show that he's doing in Chicago. That he's promoting he's really trying to make it like the old UWFI. And the UWFI was really doing this shoot. It was like really trying to do like what MMA ended up finally accomplishing here in the United States, but they were doing it over in Japan way early. And you guys had Billy Robinson involved, Dan Hodge, Luthez. I mean, you got to check it out. I used to host the videos, but they're everywhere now on YouTube for free. Just type in UWFI, and that's what Billy was the company he was working for at the time. I'm sorry, I just had to lay that out for some of the people who may not know about all that in the past.
No, that's awesome, man. And yeah, you're correct. There's a lot of people, and a lot of people that. If they don't know, they need to look. Just go back in the past and see how the linkage, how it went. You know, but that's what they want to do. They want to promote those fights over here in the United States. That's why they wanted to have it, a mixed fight. So then eventually that was going to come here. And I believe it was December 22nd of 91, and I believe the first. UFC, because Dan Severn and some other guys was there in Japan also.
Yeah.
See, Dan Severn and myself, whenever before he entered the UFC, he was training, and we was actually in Japan. We was running one of the parks over there, and he was talking about he had a young lady that was helping him get himself into the UFC and stuff like that. And you know, he's a longtime friend, great guy, great person. Along with that, he was trying to get in the UFC, and of course he did. And but I believe the UFC. I don't really quite remember, but I want to say it was like late January, February, whenever the UFC of 92. I guess
I think it was 94. I think it was in 94 right around the beginning of 94 and in 93 was the first. Because I know, in fact, it might have been September 93. Because I think. That Pancrase, if I remember right, opened up 1 month before UFC. But still, for those of you who are old like me, you might remember the old commercial for the shoot fighting pay-per-view. It was like the first pay-per-view. I think that's where where UFC got the idea was you guys doing the shoot fighting or the shoot wrestling pay-per-view eventually. Uh-huh. I think that's what, because that was... Again, probably 91, 92. And that was such a mind-blowing concept to have, like, karate guys in with pro wrestlers and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't just you guys. It wasn't just Dan Severn. I mean, there was one hell of a roster. That's where Sakuraba cut his teeth. Yes. Bad News was there. I mean, really legendary.
I remember Sakuraba when he was a green guy. I mean, I remember watching him and stuff. And then, of course, later... with him training with Coach Robinson and stuff like that, he was an amazing technician himself. I mean, he's just a great guy. But like I said, it was something that you kind of sunk your teeth in with such a great coach, and you kind of try to take in as much as possible because, you know, his heart for and his passion for catch wrestling was, you know, like, as you know, and everybody else knows, was his life. He lived it every day. So,
yeah, I mean, even at the very end there, I couldn't get him off the mat. He would just stay on the wrestling mat all goddamn day. As long as you had black coffee, you know, while the sun was up, and then you had beer while when the sun went down, he wouldn't leave the mat.
Yes. I know if he had his coffee, his dip, and beer, he's good.
Yeah, oh, man. Right. Yeah. He was truly a larger-than-life character. So you had the James Waring fight.
Uh-huh.
And that, I mean, that had to have put you over huge.
It did. It was actually, you know, that I didn't have Coach Robinson at that time either. It was just a point in time that was a point in time of my life where it was like their training that they did over in Japan was pretty much amazing too. I mean, that was hardcore. I trained when I went for those 7 weeks, I was there. I trained 6 days a week. The only day I had off was Sunday. And they made me train. It was either 3.5 to 4 hours in the morning, 3.5 to 4 hours in the night. It depends on when they stop. But it's usually anywhere between 7 to 8 hours a day. Then on Sunday, they were like, well, we can have someone come and pick you up and set you kind of sightseeing. I'm like, no, I'm going to sleep all day. It was kind of one of those things. But it was amazing to have that experience. But as much as that was amazing and different people I got to work with at that time, the most amazing part of it is that whenever they came back with the opportunity that they wanted me on a contracts of like, you know, 3-year contracts at a time. And they gave me an opportunity with Coach Robinson. And that was what changed my wrestling style, my wrestling, you know, everything I did as far as the thought process of competition and competing and just a way of life of that he passed into me that, you know, he passed into several others, I'm sure, because that's what he was.
What I like, and you know, I'm going to plug this right now. If you guys go to scientificwrestling.com, you may or may not know this. I don't know what you know, but go over there, scroll down in the instructionals section, and we have actually a really great DVD. It's called Billy Scott Catches Catch Can Wrestling. Really, really good DVD. Check it out. It's kind of Billy going and introducing you to his approach to catch and what he's learned and learned from Coach Billy Robinson, learned in the ring and his own experience. So you got a gym now. How long have you had the gym open?
I've had it open. It's in June 2nd when I opened up. It's been it would be 11 years in June.
Wow.
So it's something that I've always wanted to do. Even when I was competing a lot, I really wanted to. I just never did. I could never, you know, just sit down because of a lot of traveling and stuff and just and do it because I wanted to be the coach. Because a lot of times you go to places, you may have a couple coaches, and that's not a bad thing. It's just a matter of like Coach Robinson, from his words to me was he always, of course, him being the coach he was, is that what he said pretty much was what it was. And at the same time, if he told you something, he would know. He knew what he told you 2 weeks ago, 2 months ago, or the position, or the position he wanted you in. So that's all he wanted. He wanted everything come from himself. So that's why I do that. Also, I'm just the only coach in my gym. And the thing about it is that if there's a mistake made or something like that, I can say, well, this is what we need to do with it. Just like I said, everything is, if I can be half coach to my students and to my people I teach and train, I'll be very grateful to that. So, well, he was amazing.
Any of the people that are listening and are kind of in or around the Kentucky area, you got to get over to Coach Scott's gym. I mean, you're going to get the real deal. So, Billy, what's the best way for people to reach you at your gym?
I do a lot of stuff through Facebook. I mean, it may sound a little silly or crazy, but as much as I say pretty busy and I usually get as many messages or even through the gym. I have my gym set up on a on a Facebook account too. So, but if they contact me at Billy Scott on Facebook, or want to send me something through Messenger, or contact my gym through my Facebook page, which is MMA and Catch Wrestling Academy, Smiths Grove, Kentucky. There's always things set up. I like to get things set up so we can do, you know, some seminars and stuff like that, or if we can go to them, or whatever we need to do, you know.
Yeah,
make things happen to pass.
Yeah, that's the other thing, guys. If you go over to pinandsubmit.com and scroll down, you could see there's an option there for if you do want to bring Billy Scott out to your gym. Just check out pinandsubmit.com, fill out the form there. We can get you guys hooked up. Also, if you can't find Billy Scott on Facebook for whatever reason, it shouldn't be that hard. But if you can't, you can just contact me and then I'll pass the message along as well. So, Billy, I want to take a commercial break here for just a second. But when we come back, okay. I was hoping maybe you might just tell some people a couple stories, one as an athlete, maybe another as a coach. And maybe okay. Any Billy Robinson stories, because those are always good for a good
That's
time.
That's always great. Okay.
Okay, guys, we'll be right back with Billy Scott from the UWFI. This is the Do It Again podcast. All right, guys, thank you. Our sponsors are very important to the longevity of this podcast, so please support our sponsors. This is the Do It Again podcast. I'm your host, Jake Shannon. Very excited to have a great guy, a guy who is one of Billy's boys, Billy Robinson's trained, and just a guy who's knows a lot about the game from many different angles. And that is Billy Scott. Billy Scott, thanks again for coming on and talking with everybody.
Yeah, you're welcome. Very welcome. I appreciate you having me.
So, you know, I just wanted to hear a little bit about your journey, have people get to know that who you are and, you know, the stuff you've done. And, of course, if you could probably go to YouTube, find some of those old UWFI footage. I'm trying to get them put up in a different format that's like high definition and all that, but it just, there's only so much of me to go around. So I'll get to it one of these days. But there's a ton of stuff out on YouTube for those old matches. So what were some of the most memorable moments you had in the ring? And that could be with UWFI or any other organization.
Okay. So, well, actually, you know, some of this kind of pertains, goes back to Coach Robinson. Because you know how he always liked to pull a joke on you every now and then.
Oh yeah,
different things. There was a one that pertained to a. Now I had picked him up at the airport. I had brought him down one time to a seminar with us, and him come to the out in our area. But anyway. When he came, was, you know how he always did something? He said in catch wrestling, you always kind of show one thing and do another. And yeah. You know how he talked about his transition. And I tell you what, when I picked him up at the airport, here I am sitting at the escalator because he said he would come. You know, he would come to me. So I'm sitting there waiting in the luggage area, and I'm sitting looking up the escalator, waiting to come down. You know, waiting for him to come on down, and. And I was just, man, I kept looking at my watch. I said, he's got to be here. I hope everything's okay. I was getting worried a little bit. Well, then probably about 5 or 6 minutes later, like I said, I'm sitting there at the end of the escalator waiting. I'm about to go look for him, you know. So then I heard this laughter behind me, and he was behind me. He had someone pushing him in a wheelchair, yeah. You know, his hip and stuff. He had somebody, and he started laughing. He said, you know, you're looking for me to come down the escalator. So I'm showing you I'm going to come down the escalator, and here I am behind you. I'm like, oh, my goodness. So that was something to me that it kind of related to his training and the way he kind of tried to get put things across to you, you know, is that when you're in the ring and stuff like that, you show one thing and do another, or you go from one thing and transition to another, and you kind of set them up, you know. So he was all the time doing stuff like that. And along the line of the same, I know he's had so many stories that he's told us all, but they're along the line of the same story. We had went to, same day we had left the airport, and I was coming home to Kentucky, bringing him here, and we stopped at Hooters because he always loved the chicken wings and of course the beer and stuff like that, and listened to his stories, and we kind of trying to play catch up at that time, and of course he was in Nashville for several years, and he you know, one of the favorite places was Hooters, so that's why I stopped there in Rivergate. So anyway, I stopped there and we went in, and I was in a few minutes and I had to go to the restroom. He said, "Yeah, it's right over there." He said, "Billy, it's right over there." I said, "Okay," he's not thinking nothing about it. So I went right on over that way. And as I went in that door, it was actually the kitchen. You know, I didn't listen to him. You know, I'm thinking he was in that area for so many years. And I know he went to Hooters and other places, and that was one of his favorite places. So I just took it that he knew. And he knew where it was. He was just messing with me. So that's a big thing.
Yeah, Billy was hilarious because I remember every freaking restaurant or bar we go to, if it was a waitress, always at the end he'd act because he's like this old stately, you know, British accent, you know, so he seems kind of serious, and he'd always ask him, he'd say, "Darling, you didn't ask me if there was anything further that I wanted." And then the woman would be, "Oh, okay, sir. Is there anything else I can get for you?" And he goes, "Just your phone number, darling." He would do that in every freaking place. And every woman was always charmed and flattered instead of like, you know, bummed out or creeped out or whatever. Yeah. They were always flattered and laughed. Man, he was one of a kind.
Oh, my goodness. There was a time we had left the gym and Smyrna at one time, and it had every afternoon I had an opportunity also not just training in the gym with him, because like I said, that was all I did. I would train with him, pick him up and go and train for three hours or so, and then we'd leave and go out to eat, and if he had to go have groceries or something to use on Fridays, I would take him and we'd stop by and he'd get his groceries and stuff. I help him with all that, but the thing about it was also I had an opportunity to just be kind of like one-on-one with him, and also not just listen to his stories, but listen to his advice, because you know, he always coached. Mm-hmm. Didn't matter. Mm-hmm. I think he coached in sleep half the time. You know, he's always coached. So a lot of the coaches he did is that he would really try to get you to understand if he thought that you didn't understand something. And there was times, of course, you would say that you understood, and you thought you did, but then again, he would give another angle. And then you would really understand. Then you kind of felt silly at the time. But he was just that type of coach to try to make sure you understood why and what the reason was behind it, you know. But
Amazing. That totally nails it. He was always on. Like, if you were near him, he was looking at something to fix, man.
Yeah. And I tell you what he did. I tell you what he did to me. One of the first things when I first met him, he asked me, he said, "You play chess?" I said, "Chess? Well, no." I'm thinking, in my mind, I'm like, what does that have to do with wrestling? What does that have to do? You know, I'm thinking, you know, why? You know, why do I have to play chess? And but anyway, that was one of his first things. He says, "Well," I told him, "No, I've never played chess. I played checkers," and I was honest with him. I said, "You know, in school, you know, I always tried to play in sports, and they had a different classes, you know, when you're in your seventh and eighth grade and junior high type years where you did different things." And at that time, you know, chess and checkers, you know, you're like, "I don't want to do that." But anyway, make a long story short, that's what his question was. And I'm like, "No, coach, I don't play chess." "Well, you're going to learn and I'm going to teach you." I said, "Okay." So what happened was, is that he started teaching me. He had a chess board. He had a chess board and he started teaching me.
Oh, wow.
And, every day that I picked him up, I had to play a game of chess with him. And then sometimes when I took him home, he said, "Well, let's go play a game of chess." And I'm like, "Really?" He's like, "Yep, let's go." because the thought process behind it, right? And that was where he started. And actually, that's when he started trying to make my thought process of me understanding more about catch, where you're setting him up, you're so many moves ahead, you know. Yep. And you always want to transition, you know, there's transition, and he's always said, if you stop, you're dead. So he said, If you stop, you're always on top or in control. He said, you never stop until you're in control or you feel comfortable or you sell your weight. But you have to be in control. He said, never be satisfied.
Yep.
And I'm like, okay. And that went back to the chess thing. So there was times that when I started winning chess, I had won some games. Well, then after a while, it's like, and this is how he was. He was actually setting himself up. He was trying to think how I was moving. So I was, you know, he's setting me up to win.
Yep.
So and it's like, okay, so the whole time I was thinking that, all right, I'm getting better at this. I'm getting good. And then he said, okay, now let's play a game of chess. I said, Coach, we just played, and I beat you. He's like, okay, let's play a game of chess. So what he was doing was he had actually got me, understanding and believing that I was actually beating him. And when actually he was setting me up to beat him.
Yeah, it was a false confidence, right.
Yeah, false confidence, yeah, very much so. Well, then there's another story. You know, Coach was, I don't know, Coach was probably 57 at the time or something like that. Gene Leidick was another. He was my sparring partner. We were sparring partners for a while. Gene Leidick was a great access to us, too. And Gene lived in some apartments, like, not far from Coach Robinson, you know. And just so happened, sometimes him and Gene would get together on the weekend or hang out, or they would do something. But anyway, what happened? I went to pick up Gene sometime. I picked Gene up and Coach Robinson. Of course, we go to the gym and stuff like that. But I picked Gene up one day, and he was like, he's skin all up. I'm like, what the heck happened to you? And, of course, I was playing chess at Coach Robinson's place. And they went from playing chess into a grappling. They wound up grappling in the freaking apartment. And he put a whooping on Gene, I guess. So that was pretty funny.
Yeah, that was, man. Billy, oh, God. He was a character. We went... because we did a lot of seminars in the U.S. and then eventually we got kind of picked up out and started doing some in the U.K. and Europe. And man, the first time we went out there, he was so cool. Like the first time we went out there, he was so excited, but you know, he wouldn't let you show it he wouldn't show it in his demeanor at all. But what he would do is we were going out and I hadn't seen him for probably a month or two. Okay, from the last camp to when we were going to go to the UK. And I meet up with him in the Philadelphia airport. And man, he had lost like 50 pounds. He'd been going to the tanning booth. He looked good. And man, we went out to the UK and we worked hard. I mean, we were probably, Andy Crittenden got us out there, booked us like every other day somewhere for like 3 weeks in the UK. We were doing a seminar, you know. But man, that guy could party like Keith Richards. I mean, I was floored. I couldn't keep up with him. I'd have to go back to the bed and sleep. But he never really slept at the end there. I think because his hips were always so bad, he'd stay awake until he passed out, and then he'd be asleep for like 2 or 3 days.
Wow. Yeah, I know his knees bothered him, his hips and everything else, and he always had, he was had a bad eye, and his right hand. There's another guy that's actually one of my. He brings his grandson to the gym for. He's one of my students, and in the 94 or so, this guy came to the gym and he brought some boxers to the gym. He was actually with another boxing coach, a local boxing coach from another little city, probably about 60 miles from Nashville or so, they came out and they used to bring some guys in there and do some sparring and boxing and stuff like that. And anyway, he had came in there and he met Coach Robinson and he met us and we was getting training to do some fights and do some stuff over in Japan. And he asked a lot of questions then, but anyway, here it is. You know, I've been training this other young man is a grandson.
Wow.
He found me in Kentucky and he told me actually was on this subject, a couple weeks ago, he was asking me that he had tried to get a hold of my ex. I had an ex mother-in-law and father-in-law. He contacted them and tried to see how they could find, you know, if they knew where I was.
Track you down.
Track me down so he can get his grandsons to so I can teach his grandson. But that's been about 2 years now, I guess. And I've been training his grandson, and that's amazing. He was talking about that, and he tells people that. He said, I remember when this man here was training and fighting, is how he did. And Coach Robinson, I know his linkage, you know, and he knows what he's doing, and I trust him with my grandson. And that says a lot. I mean, that to me I'm very much appreciative of people when they see you do something, or they have that much trust and faith in you, that they bring their grandchildren or kids or themselves to you, you know. So.
Well, and he even had to like do a little detective work to track you down. That's the amount of an impact you had made on him. Yeah. So that is saying something. It's really cool too, all the different generations, you know, being at play.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was I'm very grateful for that, but yeah, I enjoy that, and the passion that like I said, if I just have part of the half the passion and pass it to the ones I teach and train and make an impact on them as much as Coach Robinson did on myself and so many others, I'm very grateful for that.
So you're coaching mostly probably MMA, I'm guessing, for MMA now, or what is the majority of your coaching?
I am coaching the majority of the MMA, but at the same time, I do have some youth wrestling that are training in wrestling, and then I also have some that are doing like they do some of the the no-gi, or there's that do the jiu-jitsu little tournaments and stuff like that. Of course, with what I'm teaching. Yeah, so there's things that I'm teaching even these youth, you know, I'm teaching them. They're below the waist and stuff, and then some of these tournaments that they won't let the kids use some of the techniques because until they're like 16 years of age. But this is what I believe in. I believe knowledge is power, and if you show them – if you can show them a technique and at the same time show them a counter and get them to be able to do both or perform both or aware of both, you can have them learn, you know, 7, 8, 9 and older in the grappling or even some submissions. Of course, some submissions you can't show the too young, but at the same time, the positionings and stuff like that, you can get them to understanding the change. Because, you know, Coach Robinson, he always told you, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, by the time 5, if you don't have it, you better be changing. You better be changing the next submission.
Yep.
And it wasn't like you would go for something and be one-dimensional. There was nothing like one-dimensional. He couldn't stand that. He always had to be 60-40. And you better be the 60. And if not, you better figure out how to get there, right?
Yeah, so, that's about
that
right.
That was his way.
Yeah. I mean, he really, if you had one move, you better know 6 or 7 moves off that move. And then off of those moves, you got 6 or 7 moves off. I mean, it was like a fractal. Like it was just like a tree of knowledge, you know?
Yes, of course it is. And you had to show him. There's a thing too where, you know, as a coach, you start coaching the youth and coaching the adults, and pretty much the same. If their mindset is as long as you telling them or you showed them the technique and you telling them, and that they are able to perform that's awesome. But where it becomes for you to really put more pressure on them and getting them to understand that how much do they really know, is that when you go back and say, okay, show me in your chains of technique of your positions, how you transition from A to Z without skipping anything, you know what I mean? From top to bottom, bottom to top. And that's the main thing. It's taking what the person has given you, the opportunity to not let go, and take what they're doing and change. And don't let them be the one dictate you or what you worry about what they're going to do to you. You have to make them worry about you. And if you can do that, you're doing your job. So
yeah, it's definitely like, so you know, because I do coaching just as you do, and it's such the to coach the way Coach Robinson coached is such a departure from the way so many. I mean, I never really had seen or have seen anything like it because of the way that he would. It wasn't like a linear path. He knew what he wanted, and it was always case by case. He would look at the person as an athlete, what they could or couldn't do, and then he'd like have this whole incredible game plan for him. And it was a lot of that understanding how to chain.
Yes.
You know, which I think is like, oh, you know, you don't see it in a lot of the, I see it more now, but you don't see a lot of it in the, a lot of the grappling sports, the way I've seen it anyway, you know, more like BJJ and stuff.
No, I don't believe so either. I think it's you're all out for one thing, one or two things, and if they don't work, then you kind of there's been a over the years there's been a broader horizon of you see how they have learned and adjusted and started doing things, but at the same time you don't see the full effect of a Coach Robinson that is able to get you to transition, get you to understand, and not being afraid to try something, because the thing about it is. With failure, you can grow with. You know, if you don't have failure, there's nothing to grow. That's just like I have students in the class, and I've had some flew in and do things. But the thing about it is that don't be afraid of failure, because failure comes wisdom, because you've learned something, that you've tried something in your journey. Yeah. You know, and everybody, and the thing about it is, you may be a 170-pounder, and, you know, back then it was no weight classes. Now, you know, I like weight classes, but at the same time, there's no weight classes. So the thing about it was, is if you could do the move on a 170-pound guy, you should be able to adjust and make it work on a 230-pound guy. But it's you have to adjust. It's you doing it. It's not the power. It's the position, and that's coach's terminology was, you know, it's your position. You have to put yourself there. I can tell you, but it's up to you to get yourself there and do that. You know, there's a you earlier you were talking about Coach Robinson or tell something about something happened in the ring and stuff like that and pass along some kind of what had happened. So this is one of the stories of Coach Robinson. We was training in the gym in Nashville, was in the ring, and of course, like what I was telling you earlier is that or we was talking about earlier where he was so precise on his technique. If he told you 2 inches, he wanted you to step 2 inches, not 2 inches and a quarter. You know, this, put yourself in position. And after him telling you that so many times, and sometimes it got where you was trying, and if you realized you was messing up, you would stop. And you would stop and want to start all over.
Yeah.
Then he'll look at you, give you that look, and pull his hand across his mouth, you know, that look, give you those eyes and his glasses, and push up his glasses, right? Push up his glasses, you knew you was in trouble. So whenever I was doing a technique, I started over about 3 times. He didn't say nothing, but I seen the look he was giving me. It wasn't really good. So finally, I was getting more aggravated, and I was getting aggravated, and as I was getting aggravated, you kind of vented a little bit in the ring. So I'm aggravated myself, nothing at coach. It's just at yourself, because you want to do good. So anyway, he let me have my rant and everything. And then he said his little spit cup down the side, and he said, "Are you bloody done yet with your little rant?" I'm like, "Yeah, coach, I guess." He said, "Good." He said, "You go out there and run until I get tired." I'm like, "Okay." That was one of the things. So I didn't have them. I didn't have that often. So when I did that, I knew that I was about to go run. I was about to go do something. So he said, "You got." And then one of his things was, he said, "You got to learn how to control yourself before you're able to control the other person."
That's right.
And that was it. Because if you get mad and you kind of, get upset and can't control yourself, how can you expect to control the other person?
That's it.
You know, you can't. So that was one of his things too.
Well, and, you know, it's because it's like you said with the chess, you know, he really approached wrestling as an intellectual endeavor. Sure, it hurt. I mean, his body was beat up to hell, you know, and like a lot of us are. But he really approached it like truly like a science. Like He was really precise. He was about it being graceful. He was like an engineer with it, you know?
Yes, he was. He very much so was. And there's a lot of times there's a story like, you know, I mean, the back, throwing the bag, you know, throwing the bag straight over, and then also salto on the bag. We was in the gym, and we had boxers all punching on the bags. There was like probably, I'm guessing, we're between 15 to 20 people in there in the boxing, punching around. We had some us and, you know, the wrestlers, and we was using the ring at the time. And anyway, I was throwing the bag over, and I think Gene was sick or had an injury or something or another. And anyway, Coach was kind of doing a one-on-one type thing, whatever he wanted me to do, and trying to perfect different things. And then I was doing a salto with a heavy bag, and then throwing the bag straight over, and then come over on top of it, getting palm strikes and stuff. And anyway, we got in this thing. He kept wanting me to go straight over with the bag. I did it, I don't know how many times. I mean, it was nonstop.
Yeah.
Pick the bag back up. It back over, and he said, "Okay." He said, "Get you some water." And very seldom when if you had a water break, that was something. That was something. You might have had a water break. And once you got started on wrestling, whatever he's trying to get across, you didn't get done until he was ready. But anyway, he said, "Listen, son." He said, "I'm gonna have you shine a little bit." I said, "Okay, Coach. What do you want me to do?" He said, "Listen." He said, "We got these boxers in this room in there, and they punch on these bags, and we've been doing a bag and throwing it around, and they kind of been watching you." He said, "Listen," he said, "I feel pretty good." He said, "Won't you come in and grab a hold of me?" And Sal told me to the side, throw me. I said, "You want me to do what?" He said, "I want you to throw me." Now he's about 56 or so at the time. And I'm like, "Coach," I said, "you know, I can throw the bag." He said, "No, son, I want you to throw me." I said, "Why don't you throw me?" Sal told me to the side. Now, Jake, at the same time, he's telling me this. I'm saying, okay, right? I'm saying, okay. And you got to think, as soon as I grabbed a hold of him, my body reaction wasn't salto. I threw him straight over on top of his head.
Oh, no.
And he landed. Actually, I was apologizing before he hit the ground, I think, because as soon as I went over, I realized what I had did. And he landed on top of his head. Oh. And he fell off to the side, and I turned around. I was on my stomach. "Coach, I'm sorry. You okay? You okay?" He said, "You bloody prick." He said, "Practice is over with." He said, "I'm done." he was trying to make me throw him a style to him, and I threw him straight over.
Yeah.
And on his head. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. And like I said, we used to go out to eat afterwards and spend some time. That was a short night. He decided to go home. So he went home. That was like a Thursday. And the reason why I said it was a Thursday, because the next day was a Friday. I had to come back and pick him up. And I went to his apartment. I knocked on the door. And of course, a few minutes later, he finally shows the door. And he opens up enough. And he says, "I'm not going." I said, "Are you okay, Coach?" He said, "I can't bloody turn my head. What do you think? I'm not going." He said, "I'm going to stay here." Aww. He said, "Exactly. Yeah, I felt bad. You know, I felt like, oh my God, I'm done hurt this.
Yeah,
my coach. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I hurt my coach." And that was one of the stories. But anyway, it's like one of the things, he gave you a chance, an opportunity to throw him. And he was sacrificing his body and his trust he had in me on salto-ing him, and I threw him on his head, and he was like, "Oh my goodness!" And he's never let me live that down.
Yeah, I mean, he was. It's funny because, man, I can't remember how old he was when he did that last match, because he did a match with Bockwinkle for the UWFI.
Yes.
He had to have been past 60.
Yeah, I remember. I just can't tell. I'm like you. I can't, unless you went back.
I'd have to look it up, but he was close to 60 or something like that. And for Billy, you know, he had put his body through quite a bit, and he was pretty busted up. In fact, he used to tell me he regretted it. He was like, "You know, I needed the money. I probably shouldn't have done that match. I, you know, didn't want people to remember me that way." But you know, he did do it, and I'll be damned. I mean, with his busted knees and his hips and everything else, I mean, he had Bockwinkle in there throwing him around. You know?
Oh yeah. He was amazing. He was simply amazing. You know, and the first time I met him, and Danny Hodge. Of course, you know how he always put his hand out to shake your hand. I know whenever I first time I shook his hand, he had his right hand had a some type of nerve damage or something in his hand. His pinky and his other finger wasn't they wouldn't ever really straighten out. To my knowledge of all the years of messing with him or training with him, whenever he would grab your wrist, he would actually grab it like as a hook,
right,
and pull it back. I tell you, and you know this too, I'm sure he's done you that way. When he's grabbed your wrist, once he grabbed you with that and hooked you with that hand, you was pretty much whatever he wanted to do.
Once he got his hand on you, I mean, it's so funny. Like, man, people just had no idea. I think because he was a big guy, he was a heavyweight, they don't realize how subtle and technical everything he did was.
Yeah, it was, and it wasn't. And the thing that he tried to get across to you was technique, basically. And the thing about it was, is like I said, it's putting yourself in position, and it's you're moving yourself. That's what I do with other people, is put yourself, like I said, help them put yourself in position, understand the fundamentals. Because a lot of times, I know when I did wrestling through school and stuff like that, I was thinking everything was power, you know.
Yeah.
That's the only way I was coached. And of course, there's always power is always good too. But at the same time, you know, you can't power everything for, you know, you'll be shot in 2 minutes time, you know. So I know a lot of times he used to have Gene and myself, after we did our training right towards the end, he would have us do some wrestling around. And it went from anywhere. It started like in 15 minutes. And eventually he worked us up to where he was doing it 45 minutes towards the end of the class. So it was like he was wanting to see our transition, our changes. I mean, of course, we had several people flying at different times and work with different ones in the military or just some type of combative type thing. They always went through the camp and stuff like that. And you spar, and whenever you did stuff like that, that was him. I always tell you, you know, they brought some guys over from England one time, and one was a national champion, and another one was pretty well respected guy too. I can't remember their names, but they came over. They used to have them come over and be our sparring partners for a while, because there for a while, Gene and I was on to sparring each other all the time. And of course, every now and then we would use the boxing, spar with the boxers, stuff like that, box and stuff like that. But they never really wanted to grapple, of course. But they would have guys fly in, and you would grapple with them and have a camp with them, and they would be sparring partner for a while. Actually, Robert Lucarelli, who fought in, I believe, UFC 3, he came up sometime after that to our place, and he came in.
Yeah, I've talked to Bob for years just through social media, and when, you know, I first hooked up with Billy Robinson, he was right there always sending me a note and stuff.
Oh, yeah, he had a lot of, as far as like the history about the wrestling, and there's a lot of history that he gathered. I know whenever Coach Robinson came down, he had actually came up and did the thing with Coach Robinson also. And of course, when you go out to dinner and stuff afterwards, you know, you got guys always still asking questions and stuff. And Bob was always asking questions too about different things and kind of things that were said in the past, vice versa, or whatever. And like I said, a lot of knowledge. And then, of course, with Coach Robinson, I don't know if you remember James Maritato or James Stone actually came down and trained with us too for a while. He had did some shoe fights for Steve Nelson down in Amarillo, Texas before too. We was over in Japan, and how Coach Robinson always liked to pull jokes and rib everybody and do stuff too. And of course, Coach Robinson and I, we was together so much that, there's a lot of times he would say, pull a joke on somebody, and I was like, okay, whatever. I knew it would have to be a joke.
Yeah.
Coach Robinson.
Yeah.
Well, we was in a hotel over in Japan, me, James Stone, or James Maritato, and Coach Robinson. And of course, James came up to the room, and he was like, man, I got this little on his hip bone, he had like a little a circle, and it was just like where he'd been grappling, but for whatever reason, it almost looked like a ringworm, but it wasn't a ringworm. It was like a little he was freaking out about it. He was pretty self-conscious about a lot of stuff. So he showed me. I said, man, I said, you know what? I said, go show Coach Robinson and see what he tells you. I said, because, and tell him, I think, you know, I don't know about it, but see what he thinks. Well, Coach, he goes downstairs and asks, because Coach Robinson was on the next floor down. He goes down and he knocks on Coach's door. And he knocks on Coach's door, and as soon as he opens the door, he steps in the room and says, Coach, I got to show you this. And he said, Billy told me to get you to look at this for me because didn't know what you might think of it or whatever. And he pulls it down and looks, and Coach Robinson steps back and says, oh, my God. He said, you need to get away from me. You need to get away from me. He said, what? What do you? What? What is it? He said, it's a ringworm. And he said, you need to go all your clothes that you've been wearing. You need to put them in the bag and get rid of them. He said, you need to get rid of them. And Coach was letting pretty bad. And then anyway, James comes back up there to the room, to my room, knocks on the door. He said, Coach said there's a ringworm. I said, what? A ringworm? Of course, I'm giving it back to us. I said, you got to get away from me, man. We got these fights coming up, and they might not let you fight. And he said, oh, my goodness. So anyway, me and Coach, we drag it on all day. And then, of course, later that evening, we was going to go out for dinner. And so I went to see Coach Robinson, and he said, let's go see check on James. And because usually we would meet down in the lobby, but we went to go check on James and went up to his room. And here, Coach Robinson, I myself, we was at the door whenever James opened the door. He said, you guys gonna let me go out and eat with you guys still? And Coach Robinson said, what did you do to your clothes? And James said, I put them in a bag. They're right above the thing. There's a big, they used to be like a bag. It wasn't a closet. It was like the big cabinet, clothing cabinet you hang your stuff up in over there in Japan. And he had put everything in that bag. Lucky he didn't throw it away yet, but he was going to throw all of his clothes away. So Coach Robinson started smirking and laughing and stuff at him. He said, what are you laughing about? And Coach Robinson said, son, we're messing with you. That's not a ringworm. You're okay. It's just like a little strawberry or something like you got from wrestling. He said, there's nothing wrong with you with that. He said, so you mean I can keep my clothes? Yeah. He said, you don't know how many times I started to grab that bag and just throw it away. And I didn't do it. He said, I wouldn't have any clothes to wear. So he's about ready to get rid of all of his clothes.
Oh, my God. Oh, man. Yeah. He had a sense of humor, man. Oh, man. There was one time we were out in England, and this was the second tour, and I was so beat up after that first tour. It was pretty brutal. Yeah. I said, you know what? I got to bring out an assistant. And so I brought out a guy, Sam, who had, through my work with Bill, he probably had the second amount of time with him after me. Mm-hmm. So I was like, this is mm-hmm. a guy I know, and I know the pressure that it is when Billy's making you demo and it's got to be fucking perfect, and you're yeah. in this room full of tough guys, you don't want to fuck it up and be embarrassed in front of everybody, you know, all that shit. Anyway, so we're over there in England, and we do this one seminar. Afterwards, we go to this pub, and there's snooker, you know, the game that's like pool, but it's snooker. And so the balls uh-huh. are smaller and there's more of them. And it's like a whole different thing. I don't know the rules, but boy, Billy got on Sam that he had to go play snooker. And oh my God, he just pushed Sam so hard on the snooker thing. And poor Sam, because he wanted to, you know, do good for Coach. Like, oh, Billy, he definitely liked to pull a rib, man. He was of that old school pro wrestling, Vic Christie kind of mindset a lot of the time.
Yes, he did. Yeah, he was amazing. Like I said, his main thing was to have fun with it and absorb, and also one of the things what he also tried to teach was, or he did teach is that whenever you sparred a person, he always told you, from the other side of the corner, so you always look at the guy's forearms, his neck, the shoulders. He said, you can basically look at the guy and kind of see what angles or where you want to try his weaknesses, maybe, you know. Mm-hmm. So he taught you everything. You know, he taught you everything. He was, like I said, he was a coach, he was a father figure, he was your best friend, he was whatever. And but he was one there to tear you down and build you back up too. And not, you know, it was never a tear down as far as he knew you could come back from it. He wouldn't tear you down enough where you would never, you know, he always built you up. And because it's like anything else, he would say is that, you know, you have to believe in what you're learning. You have to believe the technique. You have to, you know, put yourself in position. These things is what you have to do. And he says, just listen to me and you'll do it. And I tell you what, if you gave him just a, if you could listen to him just for a few minutes and understand the knowledge that he was giving off, just when that probably 30 minutes, an hour or first training session of knowledge is like, it blew you plumb out of the water.
Yeah.
And from that point on is that you knew that whatever he told you was it, you know, there's no, nothing but that. But you know, double wrist locks and all that stuff, you know, it was amazing. And everything was pinpoint accurate on everything. And if it ever became some type of force, you had to change direction. Well, the guy was going to look and change direction and go that way. But the main thing is that keep yourself in the 60-40, you know, percentage wise and, you know, comfortable, and always make the other guy uncomfortable. And you know, the thing about it was, Coach Robinson was, is that, you know, every time you changed and adjust, his thought was is, and you adjust and change with other guys, sooner or later, if you took the guy down and he stood back up, took him back down, stood back up and changed and adjust, the main thing is just have fun with it. You know, he says, you know, if you just keep an open mind and learn.
Yeah, he really liked that, like, flow. The technical difficulty there, you were going on about, you know, Billy and his approach. And I mean, he really was, you mentioned that it was like mind blowing, like just a half hour. And, you know, that really resonates with me because of obviously my own personal experience with it, but then going around and seeing all, you know, because the way that I trained with him is I was always training like these guys, you know, from different gyms. So there was always new people, and those new people always had that same experience. Like their mind was blown after listening to him coach for like 30 minutes. He really was, he was a genius.
Yeah. And then a lot of times they look at you and says, I had no idea. I had no idea. Yeah. This was even out there. I had no idea that this, what, you know, what is this, is catch, what is catch? And you kind of go into it and it's like, oh my goodness, this is just amazing. And the thing about it was, is that a lot of, you know, there's so many people that need to, I mean, if we just give it an opportunity, just to give it a session or a seminar or an opportunity to be in your gym or your park, I mean, you'll be amazed at what this stuff can really do to you.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, it really is like, and to that point, guys, we do have to wrap it up. It's been, I think, over an hour. It goes quick. But if you guys want to bring Billy Scott out to the gym or any of the guys that we work with at Scientific Wrestling, go to pinandsubmit.com. Pin, P-I-N, and A-N-D, submit, S-U-B-M-I-T.com. Pinandsubmit.com, and you can check it out. And Billy Scott's on there, other guys that he mentioned, Dan Severn, a whole host of guys. So get on there, check it out. And also you can go to Scientific Wrestling, check out his DVD. We also have it video on demand, so you could stream it or whatever. And then what else? If you're anywhere near Kentucky or planning to be out there, look him up on Facebook and coordinate some and come out to his gym as well. So again, you can check him out at pinandsubmit.com, book him, get the instructional over at Scientific Wrestling, or just through Facebook directly, just go to his gym and get a workout. Billy, anything else you wanted to add? I appreciate all you're doing for Catch, man. It's just, you know.
Like I said, I just appreciate the opportunity to get on here and be able to talk with you and pass some of the time away on about Coach Robinson, because bringing back so many great memories. And the thing about it is that, like I said, if I could just be passed along part of the knowledge that Coach Robinson gave me the opportunity to do, I would like to give other people the same opportunity and learn how much this stuff can really change your style and change, change the, some of your outcomes, and actually just way of life where a big part of it is. Like I said, I really appreciate you and what have you done for Catch, and if we can get this growing, make Catch even grow even more. You've done such a great job with it, and over the quite a few years, I know you've been doing it too, and it's amazing. You're doing an amazing job. I really appreciate you.
So. Oh, hey, thanks. I think it's me because guys like Billy and Carl, you know, I could be a bit of a hard ass like they can sometimes too. So,
yeah.
Billy, guys, check him out. Go to pinandsmith.com or scientificwrestling.com. Look up the Billy Scott stuff. It is really great. Yeah, thanks again, Billy, for taking the time.
Thank you, Jake.
All right, guys, we'll check you all next time on the Do It Again podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you for visiting all of our sponsors. And please always check out Scientific Wrestling, Pin and Submit, Coach and Catch, and KingOfCatchWrestling.com. Thanks again, guys.